Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for joining us today for All Sides Weekend. This is the book show. This is the time of the month when we get together and the panel gives you recommendations of great reads, what to look forward to, maybe some books that have been around for a while and are worth reading again. The book show is a favorite among our listeners, and I am delighted to welcome Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. It's very important for anyone who loves to read to check out Cassie's blog. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Library. You're not at Whetstone right now, right? You moved.
So I'm filling in. I'm doing an interim experience. So I'm the temporary branch manager at Whitehall, but I will be returning to Whetstone in late September.
We're at Whetstone. You are also youth services manager. And Chris Hickey every month brings us quick picks, those books from the library that everybody wants to read. And Chris Hickey will tell you all how to skip the line. And I am delighted to welcome back Eric Obenow from $2 Radio. $2 Radio is a publishing concern and a cafe on Parsons Avenue. And when I first met Eric Obenow, I think he was just starting out and seeing and wondering, I wonder if this is going to go. He's back, and it has, and it is going. So I'm delighted to have you back to the show. Eric Obenow, $2 Radio. Great independent bookstore, great cafe, and I'm going to start with you and ask for you to give us a recommendation of a great read.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a joy to be here. I ran into you at the book festival last weekend, and you saw me sweating outside at our booth, and you're like, give this guy a microphone. So yeah, we did start as a publishing company. 2025 is actually going to be our 20th anniversary. And so to mark the occasion, we're starting to reissue some of our evergreen titles from our backlist. So books that we came out with more than a decade ago that did well, that continue to do well, that we wanted to refresh with new covers and with new introductions from acclaimed writers. So we reissued the first two this summer, those two being Questionable Shape by Bennett Sims with an introduction by Carmen Maria Machado. Bennett Sims, A Questionable Shape was his debut novel when we came out with it in 2013, and it won the Bard Fiction Prize. He, as a writer, has won also the Rome Prize for Literature, and this past spring, his newest book, which we published in November of last year, Other Minds and Other Stories, was a finalist for the Story Prize and the Joyce Carol Oates Prize. He's been compared a lot to Nicholson Baker, David Foster Wallace, who is actually his mentor. But A Questionable Shape being his debut novel, it's like a zombie novel without any zombies. The undead, when they come back, return to places from their regular life. So if you went to the track every day and walked circles, then when you became reanimated as a zombie, you might return to the track and walk endlessly in circles. So it follows a character whose father he believes is undead now, and it becomes more a question for him as he sets out to try to find his father, how well does he actually know him? And so he tries to think of any places that his father might return to. Meanwhile, it takes place in Baton Rouge, and hurricane season is descending on the city, and so he needs to find him before hurricane season really kicks in. And then the second book that we reissued just earlier this week is The Only Ones by Carola DeBelle. And it was her debut novel. She was a music critic at the Village Voice for a bunch of years. And we published it on the eve of her 70th birthday. And it was her debut. And it follows a woman in a pandemic world who is strangely immune to disease. And she makes her living as a test subject. And so she's hired to provide genetic material for a test. And then the person who hires her backs out at the last minute. And she is left with a product, which is essentially her clone. So it becomes, when you peel back the layers, it's actually this really original just mother-daughter story as she's trying to care for her daughter who doesn't listen to her, enroll her in school, wait for the school bus, things like that. But NPR, when they reviewed it at the time, they said it's a debut novel on par with some of the best speculative fiction of the past 30 years. The Only Ones deserves to be shelved alongside Margaret Atwood's The Handmaid's Tale, Nalo Hopkinson's Brown Girl in the Ring, and P.D. James's The Children of Men. It's that good and that important and that heartbreakingly beautiful.
And it's called Only Ones by Carolyn DeBell, published by $2 Radio by you, Eric Obanoff.
Yes.
I'm very curious, when you have a manuscript or you're looking at something that you think you want to bring out, how long does it take you into reading it to know, I've got to do this?
It can happen really quickly. I mean, like, you can tell immediately whether the author has control over their language and, like, authority over the world that they're creating. And then sometimes the manuscripts that are really hard to kind of pull the trigger on are ones that you might spend 50 pages with or 100 pages with before you realize, okay, this isn't the perfect fit, or it might be too similar to something that we already published. So it can be really hard. But yeah, the ones that are really gripping are ones that take place in a location or setting that tell a different story that we haven't already told before. Or if they are telling a story that we're already familiar with, like a mother-daughter story, if they're doing it in a unique way.
Repeat the titles and authors real quick for us, okay? Just
A Questionable Shape by Bennett Sims and The Only Ones by Carola DeBell.
These are recommendations from Eric Obanoff at $2 Radio. You're listening to All Sides Weekend Books. And Cassie Rose, I want to come to you and ask you what you've been reading these days.
Well, I just finished about a week or so ago one of the most suspenseful books I've ever read. And it's called The Seventh Cross by Anna Sagers. And it's not a new book. It's one of the New York Review book classics. And it's about seven prisoners who escape a Nazi prison camp around 1933 and maybe 1934. And it takes place over a week, and it follows one protagonist, George Heisler. Yet you get the information about the other prisoners and what happens to them. And what makes this story so thrilling and suspenseful is, first of all, the talent of the author, because she doesn't use, like, cliffhangers at the end of a chapter, or, you know, the gun under the seat and the train, that kind of thing. So the story just sort of naturally has tension and tells itself. But it follows George Heisler over about a week, following the Gestapo is after him, and he needs to find people who can help him. But where the greatest tension happens is because anyone who comes in contact with him comes under threat, because they will be pulled in for interrogation. So there's a situation where he climbs over a barrier into a schoolyard, a campus, and he sees a shed. He goes into the shed, and he sees a jacket that he steals. But in climbing over the barrier, he's cut his hand on some shards of glass. And so he wraps it up with the lining of his old coat. And then he leaves. And of course, now they have this coat to look after, because the kid who owned the coat, and it was brand new, can say that it was stolen. So now they're closer on his trail. He ends up in a doctor's office, a Dr. Lowenstein. And of course, he goes up to the reception desk, and they have to tell him, they say at first, that the doctor is Jewish. He goes into the doctor's office, and immediately this physician knows something is wrong. And we are in the place with him, where he is washing his hands much longer than he would take to wash his hands. And because he's thinking, I have a wife, I have children, who is this person who has walked in here? Just fix the hand, just fix the hand. But it's that tension that is created, which we feel. And George doesn't look at him, he doesn't say anything, and the physician does fix his hand. So it's that kind of tension that builds throughout the book. It affects his estranged wife, it affects his father-in-law. And then there are friends from his past who are the political friends that he had that do come into the framework. I don't want to explain why, but it is a phenomenally suspenseful book if you're looking for that kind of thing. Very well written. And it was written, actually, and published in 1942. It was published in Mexico.
Yes.
It was, the publisher was in exile and published it in Mexico, in German, and simultaneously in English. It went, it hit the bestseller list. I mean, I think it's in the afterword, it sold more than 400,000 copies within the first 6 months in the United States. So it just took off. And then in 1946, after the war, it was published in Germany
It's a phenomenally good book. It also was, there was a film adaptation starring Spencer Tracy.
Title and author again. And also explain that imprint, because you and I like that imprint very much.
Yes, it's The Seventh Cross by Anna Sagers. New York Review of Books has an imprint called New York Review of Books Classics, in which they bring back out-of-print books or neglected books or books that should get more attention that have just been long disregarded. And so they really do bring back to life these phenomenally good books. So it's not always the new book that you want to have. It's also these old books that are coming out. McNally Editions is doing that. Also, there is, I forget his name, but he does neglected books. His name is Brad someone. Anyway, online, if you go to neglectedbooks.com, I think is what it's called, he is a great backer of bringing out forgotten books. And he's done some publishing with a press that's out of England, and I'm forgetting that name, but I've talked about some of those books too. A Gentleman Overboard was one of those books.
But this is called The Seventh Cross, and it's a recommendation from Cassie Rose on today's mm-hmm. All Sides Weekend Books. We are talking about book recommendations, and Chris Hickey brings us Quick Picks from the library, which are?
Quick Picks are the uber popular books, very long hold list. The idea is that you can walk into one of our buildings and the book that you are on hold for will be sitting there on display. You can take that book and you can jump the line.
So what do you got for us? Give us a quick pick.
I have a spicy romance for you.
Oh, here we go again.
Here we go again. Okay. And we have talked about Tessa Bailey before. She is 5 out of 5 Chili Peppers. She is known as the Michelangelo of dirty talk. And there is lots of dirty talk in this book. This is the second book in the Big Shot series. It is called The Au Pair Affair. And I know what you're saying. She's an au pair. We're going to go there.
I'm not saying anything.
This takes place in Boston.
Boston. My old town. Okay.
So the two characters, Burgess and Tallulah, were in Fangirl Down, which was the first book. So that first book, Wells and Josephine, they will be popping in and out of this book. So if you've read that, you know who they are. So Burgess is this big, burly hockey player. He is known for toughness and meanness. The fans call him Sir Savage. And, he kind of refers to himself like Bostonians love a villain. So he is like a Bostonian villain. And he plays for a fictitious hockey team. It's not the Bruins. It's the Bearcats, but it's the Bruins. And Tallulah, who we met in the other book, is coming to Boston to be the au pair for his 12-year-old daughter. He is a divorced father of a 12-year-old girl, and she spends half her time with him. And he, because of his practice and traveling, he needs someone to help take care of her. She is a grad student at one of the colleges in Boston at biology, getting her graduate's degree in biology. So she moves in. I mean, there's been sexual tension since the first book. The tension just mounts and mounts and mounts, and it is spicy. But the thing that's so great about Tessa Bailey's heroes, so the men she writes, she allows them to feel the full range of human emotions. So these are emotionally available men. We get their perspective and all the things that they are thinking about and feeling. So it's not just, he's not one-dimensional. Like your mom's romance. These are empowering romances. These are consensual. And safety is a big theme in this book, because Tallulah has had a frightening experience in her past that we learn about as this book goes on. And so she needs to feel safe with someone, and that is not easy for her. And so he knows that, he's this big dude, and making her feel comfortable in his presence and earning her trust is a big part of this story, along with the spicy payoff.
That is a recommendation from the spicy Chris Hickey at the Columbus Library. Give us the title one more time.
It's called The Au Pair Affair, and it's by Tessa Bailey.
This is All Sides Weekend Books. We're going to take a quick break and come on back with some more spice and some more reads. Don't go away.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
We are back. All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy. Delighted to welcome the panel, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, Eric Obanov from $2 Radio, and Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. Give us one more quick pick.
Okay, let's talk about, so we've got a thriller for you.
Okay.
So this is Liz Moore. She wrote Long Bright River, and this is called The God of the Woods. So this takes place in the 70s and takes place in the Adirondacks. There's a summer camp. And one morning, the cabin wakes up and a 13-year-old Barbara is missing from her bunk. Now, Barbara is not any camper. She is the daughter of the very wealthy family that owns this camp. And this camp is the main employer of the people of this region. They're not well-liked. They're not good people. And this is not the first time that one of their children has gone missing. So her older brother, 14 years ago, also went missing from this camp in the same fashion and was never found. So this book takes us between the two time periods, the 70s where Barbara goes missing, the early 60s where her brother goes missing. And it's a layered story. So you have the mystery of what's happening. You also have all of these very messy interpersonal relationships happening underneath the surface. There's also lots of red herrings. So we think we know who did it, and then she throws us a curveball. So there's lots of that happening. Family is very much a theme of this book because Barbara didn't really like her family, and we kind of go into that. The investigator who is trying to solve this mystery also has lots of complex family issues. So there's lots of stories along that. There's an encounter this investigator has with a serial killer in this book, and it is based on the actual Adirondack killer, Robert Garrow. So we get to go into a little bit of that. So a little bit of Silence of the Lambs moment, if you will. Liz Moore is actually from the Adirondacks. Her family still has a cabin there, and so she has a relationship with this region. It's very much a feeling of it's just too quiet there. So the woods itself are kind of like their own character. It's very creepy, very moody, but you know, a good thriller, summer camp thriller.
A quick pick from the Columbus Library. I wanted to say Chris Hickey is very generous every time we do a show of keeping track of all of the books and authors we talk about, and they go on the library's website. Is that correct?
Yes. If you go under books, we have a subheading on our website called Books, and if you go into recent activity, there are all kinds of book lists. And I do a book list every month that has all of the titles that are discussed. And you can just click on those titles and reserve those books and have them sent to whatever branch you like.
Thank you for that.
Thanks. You're very welcome.
So check on the library website, the Columbus Library website, if you wanted more details about the books we're discussing on the show, because we are fleeting about it. Eric Obanov, I wanted to ask you, first of all, you, 20 years ago, set out an indie bookstore when nobody was doing that. It was a very risky thing to do. It's a wonderful store. It's a great place to sit, look at books, buy books, and have coffee and stuff. How's it going?
It's going good. Now, when we started as a publishing company, we've been doing it for several years. And 7 years ago was when we actually opened the bookstore, bar, cafe. We host a ton of events. Last night we hosted an event with Matter News where they're starting sort of like a town hall community conversation series. And last night it was on caring for the unhoused. And so it deals with some of their reporting that they're doing. But everything from like we have a monthly variety show, magic show, a monthly comedy show to traditional author readings. And one of the books I was going to talk about today is actually called Carrie Caroline Coco by Sarah Gerard, who's going to be reading on Monday the 29th with Maggie Smith at our shop. And Sarah has published a number of books. We actually published her debut novel called Binary Star. I think it was 2015. It was an LA Times Book Prize finalist for fiction. But her new book is kind of a departure for her where she's dipping into true crime, where it's Carrie Caroline Coco deals with the murder of her friend who was involved in the literary scene in New York and ran a popular reading series and with a adjacent publication called Wendy's Subway. And she was murdered by her roommate. And Carrie Caroline Coco is a really patient book that dives into Caroline's, I don't know, personality, relationships, everything like that, as it investigates why someone would do this to her and the circumstances that led to it. And it follows the case all the way through the trial, Sarah Gerard does. So it is, you know, I could see it being fodder for a podcast, a true crime podcast, but it's a little more patient and literary than that. But I would recommend it. And Sarah, again, that date is Monday the 29th when she's going to be reading with Maggie Smith at our shop.
So all anybody has to do is look up on the web, $2 radio, to get to your website. And, it, you know, I'm sure all the information they'll need is there.
Yeah, so we have $2radio.com is the website of the publishing company. $2 Radio HQ is our storefront. I would recommend signing up for our newsletter, which if you go to the HQ website, at the very bottom, there's a thing. You just plug in your email, hit submit, you'll be signed up. But yeah, it's a twice weekly newsletter.
I'll do that after the show.
Yeah.
Okay. If the computers are working, I'll do that after the show. thank you from Eric Obanoff. Cassie Rose, give us another recommendation too.
I've got a book that is, it's very funny, but it's also very serious. It's called Nevis by Sasha Naspini. And it takes place in Tuscany on a farm. And a man goes out to feed their pig, Clementine. And he has a fatal stroke and he does a face plant in the pig trough. And so there's the funeral, and there's the widow. Nevis becomes very lonely. She's in her 60s. She was married since she was in her 20s. And so she goes out to the chicken coop, and she brings in her favorite hen named Giacomina. And surprisingly, the hen fills the void of her loneliness, and she stops thinking about her husband, which, of course, she thinks is really wonders if something is wrong with her. Well, then there's the hen is sitting on the armchair watching television and just becomes stiff, frozen in front of a Tide detergent commercial where the washing machine is going around and around. So Nevis calls the town veterinarian who's drunk.
Who's drunk, the chicken or the veterinarian?
Veterinarian's
drunk, okay.
And it's 9 o'clock at night. He's been, you know, he's known to start drinking in the morning.
Oh.
So now his wife drags him to the phone. And of course, now he's got to listen about a frozen hen.
It's going to be one of those shows, folks. No. Right now, here we go.
The thing is, and it's very dry humor, too. I mean, you can imagine the conversation. He's trying to process this, and he's like really hungover. And he says, all right, the hen is hypnotized by, you know, the commercial. So then, I'm not going to be able to keep doing this.
Do not adjust your set, everybody.
No, eventually it turns to become more serious, sort of. I mean, because they've known each other for a long time. So now she brings in the past, a story about a young girl named Rosa that was a teenager when they were both teenagers, the vet and Nevis. The book essentially becomes a long phone conversation. So the vet is, again, trying to get off of this phone call. He's still struggling with his cognitive clarity. We'll just put it that way. And tells a story about Rosa, a friend of theirs, who fell in love with a boy in the town that all the girls were in love with, but knew he wouldn't commit to them. And he was, of course, taking advantage of all the girls. But this one, Rosa, threw herself off the Belfry Tower. And the vet remembers that because he saw her. And it doesn't become, it's not serious, but it's like, why are you bringing this up? And what happens at this moment is that Nevis says, at one point, is this your Rosa? And he says, what are you talking about? And what that becomes is a kind of code of, is this what they were talking about at the time? What keeps you up at night? Is this the seed that has driven you to becoming a drunk all of your life? Is this the seed? I mean, this is universal for like almost all of us. Is this the seed of what has created behavior in your life all your... And so throughout the book, occasionally she will say, oh, that's their Rosa. So there's another part in the book too where it turns and it seamlessly happens because she's the author is just so very good. You don't feel like there's a break. And the vet just is beginning to feel like he just wants out because she is, you know, dissecting a lot that is in their past. And this the third part is pretty pretty moving. And then, of course, the author brings it back up to some humor and also to, you know, the hen does have a little feature towards the end. And
where do you find these books?
This book is, I mean, it's published by one of my favorite publishers, Europa Editions, and I have no idea how I found it other than I might, you know, a lot of times I search publishers' websites to look for the books that are coming out, or a lot of times also in the summer they have sales, and so we get their backlist probably during one of those searches. It's a great book.
Title and author again. Just
it's called Nives, N-I-V-E-S, by Sasha Naspini.
And that's going to be on the library's website, thanks to Chris Hickey. Mm-hmm. How do you
Absolutely.
Find them again? Check out books?
If you go to columbuslibrary.org, you will, there's there are headings like research, events, things. If you click on books, it will take you to all kinds of options. And if you click on recent activity, all kinds of staff-generated lists will pop up. And I will create this one this afternoon. And you will see all the past WOSU lists as well. So if you, gosh, something 3 shows ago, like, oh, what was that? You can get on that list, see it, click on it, and then reserve that title.
Thank you for that.
You're very
Much
welcome.
Much appreciated. Now we're going to go from chickens and tied in the laundry to another quick pick from Chris Hickey of the Columbus Library.
So this one I want to share is not a quick pick, but I'm reading it now, and I just wanted to talk about it. If you like T.J. Klune, he wrote Under the Whispering Door, House on the Cerulean Sea. This is called The Spell Shop by Sarah Beth Durst, and it has that same feel, that cozy fantasy, fantastic characters. And this is about a woman named Keela, and she is a librarian in this fictitious city. It's a grand library. It's a magical library. And people come to do research. So she basically lives in her stacks. She is in charge of the spell books of this library. And she has a research assistant. He's a magically induced spider plant named Kaz. And so he's her research. He's very well read, so he's very opinionated. And there's now war in this city, and they have set fire to this library. And so she is... they have taken as many books as they can carry and put it on a sailboat and fled the city with these books, which is illegal. You cannot take spell books out of the library. And doing magic, if you're not a magical person, is also illegal. So her family is from a small island, and she knows that there's still a cottage there. So they flee there to hide with these spell books. And when she gets to this island, she has vague memories of it because she was a young child. Her parents are no longer living, and sees what has happened to this island in the wake of the magic left. So the sorcerers used to come and do these things, and they were prosperous. There was fish, the good weather, and they left. They stopped coming to these outposts. And so what she sees is poverty and a lot of suspicious people. But there's lots of magical elements. The cats have wings, so that there's flying cats. There's mer people. She meets a man who becomes a love interest, and he is a herder of mer horses. But they're all struggling because of these things. The trees are dying, so they don't have fruit the way they used to. And so she decides, in order to make money, to open a spell shop, but it can't be a spell shop. So she makes jam to kind of hide what she's doing. So she and Kaz research all these books that they brought with them to try to find remedies for all of these problems on the island. And it is just like a sweet, it's a cozy fantasy. So it's just very sweet, like really quirky, fun characters, but a good story. And I bought this book mostly because there's like a, what would you call this? Like that, like a gilt edge, this beautiful purple color to the edge of the pages. And it's just a sweet story. I'm enjoying it.
That's a, not a quick pick,
not
but
a quick book, but one you should definitely read.
From the Columbus Library. Title and author one more time.
The Spell Shop by Sarah Beth Durst.
This is the book show, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, Chris Hickey, and Eric Obanoff. What are you reading? What do you got for us?
Well, we're preparing to launch this book in September called Us Fools by Nora Lang. It was a finalist for the Novel Prize, which is put on by Fitzcarraldo Editions and New Directions and Yiramondo in Australia. And thankfully they passed on it and we had the opportunity to publish it. It comes out in September. It's already generating a good amount of buzz, I guess, like behind the scenes and trade publications. It got a starred review at Kirkus Reviews. And it's phenomenal. It follows two sisters who are coming of age during the Midwestern farm crisis in the 1980s as they're sort of realizing that they need to, like feminist upbringing, being homeschooled by their mom is maybe at odds with patriarchy and American values of the time. It's really voice-driven book, like for fans of Nell Zink, really rambunctious. It's also very funny. And like Cassie was saying about the book that, you know, starts out where it's, you know, you're constantly laughing. There's that old adage, like make them laugh before you make them cry. And this book subscribes to that too. It's called Us Fools by Nora Lang. And so it follows the sisters as they're growing up during the farm crisis to when their family actually is forced to like lose the farm and move to Chicago. And then later on in life too, as the youngest, her older sister, Joanne, reveals to her that she's wants to have a child. And Bernadette is wondering why, after everything we went through, would you want to bring, you know, a child into the world? And so it begins this introspective look back on their upbringing and everything like that. It's a great book. Comes out in September. Really excited about that.
It's called Us Fools.
Us Fools, yeah.
A recommendation from Eric Obanoff and $2 Radio. And we're going to take one more break and come back with more of All Sides Weekend Books. Don't go away.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
We are back, All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, with Eric Obanoff from $2 Radio, and with Chris Hickey from the Columbus Library. Chris Hickey, I saw you last Saturday, and I saw Eric last Saturday at the Columbus Book Festival on the grounds of the main library downtown on a very hot day, but people did not stay home.
They did not. We had more than 40,000 people, and that's like 10,000 more than came our first year.
When it rained.
When it rained. So I just want to say, you know, on behalf of the library, we are so grateful that so many people came out, that this was an event that Columbus very much wanted, and we're going to do it again. We don't have a date picked for 2025, but we do have the Columbus Book Festival has its own social media channels. So please follow them. And then as soon as details are ready to announce, they will be announced there, along with on, you know, Columbus Library social media.
I was amazed. I ran a panel, and you ran a couple of them, and you're a library employee, and Eric was there with an exhibit. I was amazed last year and this how well run it is. And all the moving parts must be very daunting, but somebody visiting doesn't see that.
It was nice to hear, especially from authors who very much felt it was well run. I give credit. We have an outstanding team that runs the book festival, and they do it very well. It was so fun. I had a great time.
I did too, and the community did it well. So congratulations and thank you to the library. Patrick Leshinsky, the CEO of the library, I was talking with him waiting for an elevator on Sunday, and he was very sort of adamant that it was the Columbus Book Festival, not the Columbus Library Book Festival, even though it was on the grounds and all of you were working. It's because of the library it's happening. But he really wanted it to be very, very inclusive of the entire community.
Absolutely. I mean, we have such wonderful independent bookstores like $2 Radio, and like Columbus is just like a vibrant community, and there's just so many different book enthusiasts. So there's plenty of inclusivity to go around.
Cassie, was it you telling me that there's a new bookstore in Arlington?
Yes.
I don't know the name of it, but it's in the Tremont Center.
Storybook? It's in the Tremont Center, yeah. Yes. It just opened a couple weeks ago.
And there's one coming in Clintonville as well.
Oh, interesting.
And there's also a children's bookstore coming to Clintonville. So it's Eric Obanoff started something. Don't go opening in his neighborhood because he's got that sewn up. But, you know, this is a big city and there's plenty of room for some wonderful cover to cover, which is in Arlington, which began in Clintonville, the children's bookstore, which is phenomenal. So we seem to be a very good market for that.
Absolutely. And there was, I mean, going back to the book festival too, I didn't look at the list of authors that was coming, and I knew a few of the people that the library brought in, or the book festival brought in from New York, and they were remarking, you know, having attended, you know, been around the circuit at the Brooklyn Book Festival, the LA Times Festival of Books and stuff like that, that they appreciated and admired the Columbus Book Festival even more than these long-running, whatever, prestigious festivals like in I don't know, Brooklyn and L.A. So it was, the programming was really impressive, and congratulations for the whole crew for pulling it off.
Thank you. And we're really delighted to hear that.
Your colleagues at the library and all the volunteers, the many volunteers there, could not have been more helpful or outgoing. So thank you all for that. It was a big success.
Well, thank you. You're very welcome. Thank you. Thank you for saying those things. And Christopher, I want to say that I know my team at Whetstone, every time you say something nice about library staff, they're just grateful.
Oh,
that
well,
makes
thank you.
Their day.
That's thank. I'm, you know, very fond of a lot of them because I'm. That is the magnet in Clintonville for the neighborhood, the Whetstone Library. That's everybody goes there, and so, and it's. I'm sure it's true in every library in the system. It's just you can't say. And also, you've been feeding children. The library has.
Yes. Some of them we do at a number of our locations. We have lunch. We have snack. It's a little bit different at every branch because we have different
needs.
We have different options. So like some will have breakfast, some will have lunch. The Children's Hunger Alliance partners with us to make that food possible. But yes, there are definitely needs in our communities that we are trying to help with that, particularly during the summer when children don't have access to meals because they aren't in school.
You also have cooling centers as well.
We did cooling centers. When we were closed for the Juneteenth holiday, we did keep some branches open so that we could have cooling centers.
Kudos again to the Columbus Library, and thank you all for that. And let's have a recommendation. Cassie, what do you read? What else are you reading?
Well, I
and try not to get hysterical. This
time. I know. I just thought I was totally
usually
lose
I try
it.
To make Cassie Rose laugh, and it's she made me laugh, and I enjoyed
wonderful.
That very much.
This is a memoir by Vivian Gornick. Vivian Gornick is one of my favorite authors. Whenever I see her writing in the New York Review of Books or the New York Times or anywhere, because she is just so clear-sighted. So she writes confessionally, but she also writes with, I don't know, she just, her thoughts are, you can relate to them. And she gives a lot in her writing. This is called The Odd Woman and the City. And it's really sort of a memoir about friendship, her friendship with a man called Leonard, whom she has dinner with once a week. And she was born and raised. She is a native New Yorker. And that kind of friendship where it's just everything just is syncs perfectly. You can share everything. You leave and you think, why don't we do this more often? But it's just that that works and how you can in that sharing. But that's really sort of the anchor that or the refrain, I would say, that comes back throughout the book, because otherwise she is walking through the city and through acquaintances that she runs into and strangers, she will then tell a story, especially of her own life. And she's kind of reflecting on this point in her life, in her 60s, how she got here, how life brought her to this point. And for example, there's one story where she runs into an attorney who's a friend, and he says, I need a companion for a dinner party that is of a man who has a fortune, an American heir to an heir to an American fortune is what I'm trying to say. You know, will you come with me? And she's pretty much part of the literati in New York. So she goes to this dinner and she realizes this man with, you know, his wife and in this lovely dinner party is someone who in earlier years walked away from the family and walked away from his wife to become an attorney, a storefront attorney in a slum in Brooklyn. And he was sort of in defiance of his unearned privilege. And he was spending some time there and during that process got involved with a friend of hers, of Vivian's, whom everyone thought that they were going to be together, but he ended up going back to the privileged life. And so she's at this dinner party observing him and asking that question, what is it that brings you back? Because it clearly was not, say, a love relationship with his wife. So that's the kind of thing that she gets into. Also, there are, you know, just short scenarios, getting on the bus, sitting behind the bus driver and seeing a crowd gets on and an elderly man walks on and does not pay, sits close to the bus driver, just looks at his cane, and that conversation between the bus driver and the guy who says, keep saying, yeah, I paid. And what the bus driver does, you know, pulling up at an intersection, pulling on the brakes and says, all right, everybody out. We're not going anywhere because the guy didn't pay. I mean, it's just a classic, colorful New York scene.
It's very New York. Yeah.
So she brings in a story about her mother who is, it goes to an annual event of the Philharmonic. It's the Friends of the Philharmonic, what it is. Well, she's been going to the Philharmonic all her life. She lives in the Bronx. She lives on Social Security, on her husband's union pension. And the Philharmonic makes the mistake of thinking that she's you know, a donor quality, let's put it that way. Guy invites her to lunch and he realizes his mistake because he's inviting her to become a friend of the Philharmonic. And he finally just says, you know, oh, to heck with it. I'm going to make you a friend of the Philharmonic. So Vivian goes to lunch with her every year where it is just, you know, a posh event. And Vivian just says she has committed herself to, she does not in any way get involved with her mother's unfiltered conversations because she just, you know, she just says, I've learned to give it up. And she writes about that. And, you know, it's just these charming moments that are also part of it. But through it all, she has this memoir of self-discovery of this is where my life has brought me. And it's a lot of it is New York. It's being in New York and on the streets of New York and then the acquaintances and relationships she's had.
Vivian Gornick, and what's the title of the book?
It's called The Odd Woman and the City.
Oh, I'm going to read that. That sounds...
It's a good book. She's a wonderful essayist. Yeah. She really knows how to engage you.
By the way, I sometimes claim the right to make a recommendation myself, and that is Colm Tóibín's new novel, Long Island, which is the sequel to Brooklyn, which was made into a beautiful film. Brooklyn is about a young Irish woman who comes to this country to marry into an Italian family. They're a plumbing dynasty, and they all live together in the same compound. And she's this very sort of buttoned-up, reserved Irish young woman marrying into this big, gregarious Italian family, and what happens? And Long Island is the sequel. They're both marvelous books, Brooklyn and Long Island, and recommended. Recommended for a real kind of a story, and you sort of you want her to do something, and she doesn't always do it because you really start caring about her and her environment. And I'll say no more. Mm-hmm. Speaking of environments, $2 Radio has a beautiful store, a beautiful cafe on Parsons Avenue, and Eric Obanoff runs readings. He runs events. Tell us again about getting on the newsletter.
Just go to the website, $2radiohq.com, scroll down. There'll be a big open space for your email address. Click subscribe.
That's easy. All very well. Let's sell some more books. What else you got?
Well, we hosted an event on Tuesday night. That was the book launch for a writer named Mandy Shunara. And the book was called Midwest Shreds. And Mandy visits a lot of different skate parks around the Midwest. With the angle, approaching it more from a queer and BIPOC perspective, in terms of like exclusivity and approachability in the skate parks and the community. And it really is a lot about community building. And Mandy's a terrific writer. It's their first book, but Mandy has written for a ton of different outlets online and has run a blog, has been a book critic for a bunch of years, and they're just a really graceful writer with something, you know, really valuable to say. And also they're a great presence in terms of events too. They're very funny, and so it was a lot of fun to host them for their launch.
That is Eric Obanoff from $2 Radio. Were you a family endeavor? Didn't when I first met you, you said you and your wife sat on the living room floor and like stuffed envelopes and when starting out years and years ago?
Still do a lot of that.
Yeah.
For a while, our daughter, who just graduated high school, was about to go off to college, you know, was handling the web orders and stuff like that.
Really? Good for her.
Yeah, they needed something to do during the pandemic.
That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely a family affair. You know, we do all the design and, I don't know, just juggle the tasks between the two of us.
And your storefront on Parsons Avenue is really a wonderful place to spend some time. So I recommend it. $2 Radio, and Eric Obanoff is here from $2 Radio. And we have time for another quick pick.
All right. This is the highly anticipated novel by Lev Grossman. This is The Bright Sword, a novel of King Arthur. So Lev Grossman, he said in the past, like, I don't know that there's anything more to say about King Arthur. But then he thought about how there's lots of origin stories, but not many what happens after there's no longer King Arthur. So in this story, King Arthur is now dead. And his knights who's left alive don't really know what to do. So there's a character named Colum, who was not part of the original legend, who is traveling with a group trying to find a worthy successor to Camelot. So every chapter is its own little adventure, because he does go in the backstory for some of the knights that, like, some of the remaining knights, like Sir Bedivere, Sir Palamedes. He goes into a backstory and creates, like, what have they been up to? So it's very thick. It jumps around a little bit, but you get a really rich story. So if you are interested in Arthur, this is a good read. And he asked the question, so like, how do survivors of a myth attempt to continue the myth? So it's just, he goes a deep dive on that.
Tell High us, fantasy. Just remind us of the author again. And
Lev Grossman. Now, he wrote the Magician's Trilogy, which is a much beloved trilogy. And this is called The Bright Sword, a novel of King Arthur.
And you remind us how we can find the books, all the books we've talked about today, because people ask, and we speak quickly about this. So remind
yes,
us.
Yes, if you go on to columbuslibrary.org, you are going to see all kinds. You're going to see some tabs at the top, research, books, events. Click on books. You were going to see another tab that says recent activity. If you click on that, you're going to see all kinds of book lists made by staff. And I make one every month for what's on WOSU. So you will see past lists as well as what I will be uploading today.
Today. So give Chris a day or two, though. Give her
yeah,
a little time
I,
before
it'll
you
be,
update
it. It'll be up this afternoon.
Yeah, well,
I'll do it as soon as I get back to Whitehall.
My thanks to Chris Hickey and her colleagues at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. My thanks to Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic. Her blog, don't forget, is thelongestchapter.com. And thank you, Eric Obanoff and family at $2 Radio. Go to the website, $2HQ.com, and get sign up for the newsletter. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making radio for us. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books. Keep reading and enjoy the rest of the summer.